A playlist original.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Back to the Blockbuster with your hosts, Gaius and Jackson. Today, we got nothing but straight news for you guys. Had a fairly busy week coming out of Hollywood. We got some trailers to react to today. We got some updated news regarding some new releases coming out at us. And, we're back with some box office predictions for the end of the episode. So excited to jump into this with you guys this week. And, Gaius, yeah, I'll let you kind of dive in and see where we want to start here.
I guess we can lead with one of the bigger stories today. Actually, it happened right before we started recording, because James Gunn is, you know, as we know, is putting together his the new DCU, DC Universe. Him and co-chair Peter Safran. Now that the DCEU is behind them, it's all about what's coming next. So part of that is casting Supergirl for her own Supergirl project or standalone movie, and I'm hearing that the character will pop up in another DC project before her own solo movie, so we get to know her first. But they narrowed down this casting call for Supergirl. It was down to three people at one point: Millie Alcock, Amelia Jones from CODA, and Meg Donnelly, who voiced Supergirl on the DC animated movies Legion of Superheroes and Justice League Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 1. They were all in the running. They all screen tested for James Gunn. I heard that they were all worthy, according to, you know, those in the know. But the person that ended up getting cast in the role is House of the Dragon actress Millie Alcock. She is your new Supergirl. You're more familiar with her than I am, because I haven't watched House of the Dragon.
That's right. Another property you got to get on while it's hot. But she was great in the episodes of House of the Dragon that she's in. So not much of a spoiler, but just to break it down a little bit, House of the Dragon season one takes place over several years. So she plays the younger version of Rhaenyra. And she's more prominent in the first, I think, like three episodes. And then there's some flashbacks that she's also in. She was great. She was a standout performance. I think a lot of people, by the time her performance on that show was done and we were working with like the adult Rhaenyra character, I think a lot of people were missing Millie Alcock's performance. And I agree with that. She was great. And I'm excited to see. I'm not surprised. I mean, I didn't know she was in the running for Supergirl, but for this move in her career to come after her notoriety from her role in House of the Dragon comes as no surprise. Really happy for her. Can't wait to see what she does with that role. I thought she was great in House of the Dragon. I'm sure you would think the same if you'd seen it too. She's great. Definitely a good up-and-coming talent.
Yeah, this is one, we always talk about internet discourse when people get cast and stuff like this. But from what I've seen, people are very excited that she landed the role. She was born April 11, 2000, so I mean I guess like,
oh wow,
they have very the intention of who the age range for Supergirl is very intentional here. Like, they wanted a specific age, a specific type of actress, so like you can kind of tell like where they're going with it. It's one of those things. We're reporting this because it was big DC news. I don't know where I land on the new DCU because we don't know anything about it yet. And my excitement level is not anywhere at all.
Yet. Yeah, I agree with that. Yep.
But I'm happy for her because it seems from people that are familiar like with House of the Dragon and all that she is deserving of the role. So I'll at least give it that. Like, you know, because I don't really know much about her, but.
Yeah, I looked through her IMDb filmography quickly just to see if I recognize her in anything else. Nothing stood out. She does have decent filmography for her age. She's been involved in some series since 2018, 2019. But on the note of the excitement level, I agree with you. Mine's pretty stale because I don't know really what to expect with this series. But just a little snippet from that Deadline article that did pique my interest, that I at least like on paper with the direction they're going to go with that Supergirl. This is the quote from the article that a quote from James Gunn at the time of the announcement. He says, In our series, we see the difference between Superman, who was sent to Earth and raised by loving parents from the time he was an infant, versus Supergirl, who was raised on a rock, a chip off Krypton, and watched everyone around her die and be killed in terrible ways for the first 14 years of her life, and then came to Earth when she was a young girl. She's much more hardcore. She's not exactly the Supergirl we're used to seeing. I think that's a great direction for that, honestly.
Yeah, so she's going to have some issues, huh?
Yeah. I think it's pretty cool. Different departure from that character.
Yeah, she's going to be complicated. I have no, like, when it comes to, like, the Supergirl character, I don't really have a lot of dog in the fight. I mean, I used to watch the CW show because I was all about the CW, Arrowverse TV shows. I enjoyed most of them. And Melissa, I think it's been Wazer, last name, was a good Supergirl on that show. And then, of course, in The Flash, we had Sasha Kalil that played her, and she was a fan favorite, but the movie itself wasn't well received, but she was. So a lot of people were hoping that he would carry her over into the DCU, but I think that's just not the direction he wanted to go in.
With it.
But she was good. She was the only real thing I loved about The Flash. I thought she was solid, but it's kind of nice not having a dog in this fight. Or like, hey, if everyone seems happy with Millie Alcock getting cast,
right.
Kudos. Yeah, and, cool.
Yeah, I mean, good for her. We'll see how it really goes. She's already, IMDb's quick on it. They already have that in her upcoming projects. And I think it's slated for 2025, her first appearance.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Rumor has it, they said she might appear first in Superman Legacy, which will be the reintroduction to Superman for the DCU. But they're not 100% certain yet, but she will pop up in an earlier DC project before appearing in her solo feature, Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. Congratulations, Millie Alcock. Apparently the other girls too are also deserving. They said they would have been happy. A lot of fans said they would have been happy any way that went. Kudos to her. And now she's gonna be on to a lot of big things, and on the internet judging her because it's a comic book movie and they judge everything that have to do with comic book movies. So yeah. Keep your head up. Don't listen to everyone's comments.
I was also wrong too. She is in the first five episodes of House of the Dragon, so she leads half of that series, which ended up winning the Golden Globe for Best Drama Series. So that's a pretty big accolade for her to be a lead in that show with all the accolades that it has. So yeah, looking forward to what she brings to the role. This next piece of news that we got, I don't know much. This is hopefully, I'm not sure what you know about it or if there is much known about it at this point, but you did post this today, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck working on another movie together, a Netflix movie, and this time Ben Affleck is directing Matt Damon in this role.
Yeah.
Or do I have it backwards? He is doing it?
He is, and this will be the second time he's directed him because he directed him in Air. That was their last collaboration together.
Last year.
Together. They're doing it's a Netflix thriller called Animals. Ben Affleck is directing it. Matt Damon is set to star in it. Connor McIntyre wrote the screenplay with revisions by Billy Ray. He actually, that name is familiar to me because he wrote and directed Shattered Glass, which I really enjoyed. That was all the way back in 2002, but it's a really really good movie. And they said plot details are very vague, but it's set to revolve around a kidnapping, and that's all they're kind of revealing right now. Netflix really wanted to get Ben Affleck for this. He had already set up, I guess, his next starring role. He's going to be working on a sequel to The Accountant, and Netflix knew that he's going to be doing. Yeah, Netflix knew he was going to be doing that, and so they wanted to work out a schedule with him so he could direct Animals, and they worked out something. And once, I guess, Matt Damon signed on, they fully worked out a schedule so he could film The Accountant and also direct this this year. Not much known about it, but like when they collaborate together, it's usually pretty good. I mean, Good Will Hunting being their first big thing together, and they won the best original screenplay Oscar for that, and they've done in other movies together as well. Dogma, they're really great in Dogma together, really funny. I think Ben Affleck, I think, is a good actor, but I think he's found his calling as a director. Most of the movies he's directed, I've enjoyed a lot, and some of them I would even say are really great. And I'm always kind of looking forward to what he does next as director. And, you know, Matt Damon's always a reliable presence too. I wish we knew more about the movie. I know what it's going to be about.
In time, we'll get lots of notifications, I'm sure, about it.
And I think the Netflix thing too. We've talked about that in different ways. Like, oh, it's a Netflix movie. Not something that's gonna get a theatrical release or anything. But again, though, when they work together, it's usually magic. So I'm looking forward to what they kind of put together next. And I really liked Air. That was another movie too. I think it just came out too early in the year in 2023. I didn't put it in, like, we just did our top 10 list on another episode, and that movie just missed mine as well. It was really
right? Good. Okay, I hadn't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's really good, and I probably would have gotten more awards attention had it been released later, but it was released so early in the year that I think it kind of lost the shuffle. But yeah, Netflix is solid. Like, I still ride for The Town. I like love that movie.
Oh, that movie's fantastic.
So looking forward to that, whatever that might be. All we know is that it revolves around the kidnapping, so
okay. Well, time will tell.
In
other directing news, now I think we share our feelings about this one. I don't see any positive in this. I don't know what the pairing is behind this. I just commented on JC's Merc with the Movies post about this, because he'd also posted it on his Instagram. But
yeah,
Chris Rock, famous comedian, of course. If you didn't know him before, you probably knew him after he was slapped by Will Smith at the Oscar stage a couple of years ago. Definitely known. Definitely known as a comedic actor. But I think he's been trying to, like, sort of wedge his way into more dramatic work.
Fargo. He was on that was more dramatic. Well, I guess, but that's more recent. I mean, he's been more recently. Yeah.
The only thing I've seen him in that wasn't really comic related was Spiral, which I thoroughly hated him in it too. So, like, that's kind of where my mind went when I saw this. But to the point, what I'm getting at is he is slated to direct a remake of a great movie that we have both seen. I really like Thomas Vinterberg's Another Round, starring Mads Mikkelsen. I want to say it's a Danish movie. I always want to go Swedish, but I think he is from Denmark. Anyway, fantastic movie. Mads Mikkelsen's great in it. That Thomas Vinterberg is a director. Great. But yeah, don't know why this movie is being remade. The movie only came out in 2020, I think.
2020.
And, yeah, is that right? Okay.
It came out in 2020 and won the Oscar for Best International Feature Film as well as the BAFTA. It's really popular. People have seen it, and apparently completely fine. It doesn't need to be remade.
I get, because it's an international movie, like, there's an appetite for an American remake, I guess. I always hate that trope. Very rarely do I find Hollywood is able to make a movie better when it came out in a different country. I don't see this movie being good at all. Is my takeaway. Really.
There we go. That's my takeaway too. So it doesn't feel wholly necessary. I enjoyed it when I saw it, but I know there's, like, this tendency to take international movies and repurpose them for an American audience. But sometimes when you do that, you lose what makes that movie special, because some of it is very specific to it being a foreign film and not from here.
Exactly.
And then sometimes here in America, we think we can do certain things better than the international filmmakers and stuff. So, I mean, I don't know. It's hard for me to be optimistic. It's just a weird project for him to get behind. I don't know. It feels like,
I agree,
really odd. Like, I also thought at the time when it was announced, because I didn't know that Chris Rock was such a big Saw fan, but I remember when he pitched the story for Spiral, and he went to Lionsgate, and that's how he got involved with doing Spiral, because he had this story that, you know, he thought would work. And I thought that was on it too. Like, I think I liked it a little bit more. Like, I don't think it's that good, but it was fine in the moment. But, you know, definitely didn't stay with me, you know. And it was a weird choice for him then. And I think this is apparently he really wants to make directing a priority, which is why this project is kind of coming together. But I don't know. It's like one of those things that's like, we don't need it.
It's so strange. A, it's not needed. B, if it's going to be made, I would not have put Chris Rock anywhere near this. But for those that don't know, so this is the description on IMDb for the original Another Round. And the premise is four high school teachers consume alcohol on a daily basis to see how it affects their social and professional lives. So it's sort of run as like an experiment They see a study that suggests that people who are maintain a certain level of blood alcohol percentage, like, are able to, you know, I don't know, increase overall happiness or something like that. Anyway, so these four high school teachers begin experimenting with it to different effects. And it is a great, it's sort of a dramedy. Like, it's got definitely some highs and lows throughout it in terms of like tone and whatnot. But I thoroughly love this movie. It's got a great dance sequence at the end that's from out of nowhere. Mads Mikkelsen is firing on all cylinders in this movie. Yeah. And the only other movie, they paired on, I think maybe a couple movies, but they also did the movie from 2011, I believe, called The Hunt, which was also great. Thomas Vinterberg, great Danish director. Mads Mikkelsen, of course, is always great. I don't know why Another Round's being remade, but this is what we got. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I can just picture, I know I said this to you, I can just picture like Chris Rock and like the Adam Sandler group just sitting around getting drunk at school. Like, that's just like what I picture them doing, but I'm sure that won't be the case.
It just ends up being like grown-ups.
Essentially, that's like kind of where my mind goes, but sorry, I know you're about to say something.
No, you're good. I just wanted, just a little behind the scenes. So Leonardo DiCaprio is producing this with alongside Jennifer Davison, and then Stuart Blumberg wrote a draft of the script that they will now bring in a new writer to work on with Chris Rock. Like I said, Chris Rock has made directing a priority and adds this to a Universal-based adaptation of King: A Life, the Jonathan Egg book about Martin Luther King Jr., along with an untitled script Rock is writing that has Peter Wright producing. So he seems like he really wants to get into filmmaking more. He has directed movies before. He directed Top Five, which he also wrote and became one of the biggest deals of the 2014 Toronto Film Festival, where Paramount Pictures bought worldwide. He also directed the movie Head of State. I believe he played the president in that as a comedy. And then he also wrote I Think I Love My Wife, which actually is a pretty solid movie, but a smaller one that didn't really get a lot of play when it came out, but it's pretty well done. Okay. But yeah, but very interesting that this is like what he's attached himself to. I was just like, when I saw the news, I think I just had this reaction of like, oh, I didn't know what else to say.
I was pretty mad. Maybe if it was a, I don't know, an original movie of his or something, but just, I have a soft spot for the movie that they're remaking, and I just don't find it necessary only 4 years after it came out. So
yeah,
I don't know. Time will tell how it shapes up. Don't imagine I will really go out of my way to see it, but unless a lot of details come out that make it impossible to avoid, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm still dying over You Might Remember Him by being smacked by Will Smith.
If you didn't know him before then, you certainly would have after, that's for sure.
All of his list of achievements, he went with that. That was great.
Well, no doubt, in a career look back in however many years, that will
probably it'll be in there.
Yeah, for sure.
Alrighty, was that all the actual like movie news that we just have?
That's right.
Trailers.
Four trailers, all March releases, I believe.
Yeah, and we haven't really covered trailers on here in a bit. It's been a while. But we have a few to throw at you. This first one, this is an interesting, because we have a trailer for this first one that we're talking about, and also a very interesting thing that's going on with like the director not being too happy with how it's being released. So,
I don't know anything about that.
So Roadhouse is has a trailer now. As we know, Roadhouse is going to be a remake of a very popular Patrick Swayze 80s movie. It's a total dudes movie. It's a pure popcorn entertainment. They make fun of it on Family Guy really well.
Oh my god, yes, Roadhouse.
Roadhouse, yeah, so good. But this is going to star Jake Gyllenhaal. Also, we have Conor McGregor in the movie as well. He's in the trailer too.
Jesus Christ,
doing some acting.
call it that.
I'm trying to say it politely. You know, I love that Jake Gyllenhaal, much like Ryan Gosling, is in this kind of like fun, I just want to do fun movies phase of their career, and it seems like this is what this is, which is fine. I mean, I don't see how, you know, there was no real big desire to remake Roadhouse, but here we are, and we're getting it. And so for those that don't know, the premise of this one, give you a better indication, I'll give you the premise of the original so you guys are a little familiar. They are changing some things, but I guess at its heart you're gonna know that it's got Roadhouse in its DNA. But 1989's Roadhouse starred Patrick Swayze as a cooler at a newly refurbished roadside bar who protects a small town in Missouri from corrupt businessmen. And it's also very just violent and fun. I mean, I've seen it. It is what it is. It's a product of its time.
I have not, but I've always wanted to. It's actually been on my radar for a long time. I have a buddy that swears by this movie. It's always interested me. I don't think I've ever come across it. Honestly, I would love to see it, though.
You know, it's fun. I mean, like I said, it is what it is. It's a product of its time, and it knows what it is. So at least enjoy it on that level. Remake
35 this year.
maybe that's now. Maybe that might be time for us to look back.
Maybe.
I'm
gonna look when it released.
The premise for this new one follows a former UFC middleweight fighter who ends up working at a roadhouse in the Florida Keys where things are not as they appear. Like you say, Jake Gyllenhaal is in this, Conor McGregor, JD Pardo, Arturo Castro, and Billy Magnuson. Directed by Doug Liman. Now, that makes me I can get behind it a bit because I do like Doug Liman as a bit.
I was looking at his filmography earlier, and he hasn't really had a hit in almost a decade with Edge of Tomorrow. So I saw his name, I was like, okay, like maybe this has some potential behind it. But then he's done more misses than hits lately, so I don't feel as safe about it. On that note, I feel like if this movie wasn't such a direct trying to be a remake, if it was just a little bit of a different, I think they're going a different enough direction with the whole MMA angle that this could be an original, if not derivative movie that doesn't have to be Roadhouse remake. Roadhouse. I think I would almost be more behind it if that was the case. I can't let it go that it's just a pointless remake, but
sort of. Here's how I felt after. Oh no, you're good. No, here's how I felt after I watched the trailer. I thought that I would be like, oh, that looks awful. I didn't get that impression after I watched it. I was like, it looks like it could be entertaining.
Yeah, I agree.
But again, I mean, no one was really craving a remake to Roadhouse. So like, it's very interesting that this is like one. I was actually surprised. Like I said, I do love the fun era of his career, but it seems like a really weird project for Jake Gyllenhaal to get involved with. But like, whatever. I mean, he really went all in. He really, really wanted to do it, and was really, integral in getting Conor McGregor in it too. So there's, you know, there's that. I guess the big issue that's going on with the movie now is that Jake Gyllenhaal and Doug Liman really wanted this to be a theatrical release. And then at the time when they set this up with MGM Studios, it was supposed to be, but then MGM got swallowed up by you know, Prime Video. I guess they did screen this movie for Jeff Bezos to encourage them to release it theatrically, and he still was like, nope, straight to streaming on Prime Video on March 21st. The movie's supposed to have its premiere at the South by Southwest Film Festival, but Doug Liman is boycotting it because what he signed up for, what was promised to him, was a movie that would have a theatrical release. And he released a statement, I don't have it here, but I have the gist of it, where he was basically saying that some of these streamers that say they support theatrical movies really don't. And he really kind of threw Amazon Prime, Prime Video, Amazon Studios under the bus for that, saying that they kind of bait and switched him on what their intentions were with Roadhouse. You know, after I watched the trailer, I was like, I don't see why they wouldn't want to release this theatrically. It seemed like it would do well with like the dude crowd. I don't know. It doesn't seem like something that looked like it would flop.
It's coming out in a packed March. So I'm thinking maybe they just didn't think it would be worth the promo money. I mean, March is swamped. All four trailers we're breaking down today are March releases.
Yeah.
So that maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know if I really expect Jeff Bezos to have accounted for, you know, the month of March and theatrical releases, but maybe I'm not giving him enough credit. I can respect Doug Liman for sticking to his guns and going so far as to boycott the release of his own movie, Take Stone. So good for him. I completely agree. I kind of forgot about the whole Amazon Studios absorbing MGM. I think that's a really bad thing for the future of, you know, and just the nature of movie studios. We're heading every year, it seems we're getting closer and closer to like more of a monopoly on film production, right. And I don't like that. We've seen that with what did HBO also get absorbed by?
What was that deal there?
Warner Brothers and HBO merger.
Warner Brothers, yeah. And then it became like Warner Brothers Discovery, and then like it's like
Disney buying Fox in the last few years. I think this is like a bad omen.
Also, rumors that Paramount and Warner Brothers could eventually merge one day. Like that, this is what we're kind of coming. Yeah. It seems like they, and I don't want that because like you know. No. The interesting thing is that people have talked a lot about the Disney Fox deal where they acquired 20th Century Fox, and a lot of people think that that deal in the long term wasn't really good either because like they don't think Disney completely cares for what is coming out of the 20th Century brand of you know. After they absorbed it, and I think that you lose a lot when these companies come together like that. Mm-hmm. And so I actually do respect what Doug Liman is doing, because especially if like I can totally see them being like, oh yeah, this is like we're going theatrical. That's the intention behind it. This is how we're going to release it, and then completely, you know, changing that last minute. I can totally see them doing it. And Jake Gyllenhaal wasn't happy about this either. I don't think he was boycotting the movie, but I do know that he was not thrilled that that this was just going straight to Prime. And you know, and the thing is, like, Amazon has done theatrical and Prime, and on their they released Saltburn in theaters first before they put it on Prime, so they're very capable of doing that. The only thing I can think of is like. If it maybe isn't good, I mean, they screened it, and maybe and Jeff Bezos was like, nah, we'll just release it on the streaming platform. But even like bad movies, you want theater, so it's like, you know, they could have given it a shot. I don't know, but
I wouldn't necessarily take Jeff Bezos' opinion on whether a movie's good or bad or not either. Would just expect him to shamelessly promote his studio's movies, but not that I anticipate this movie's going to be very good. But I mean, I agree, I think it could be a good, entertaining popcorn flick. I certainly won't be judging it as I would like a movie like Saltburn, like you just mentioned. But right. I don't know. Again, I think this movie just would have been so much better, and like I could have endorsed it if it wasn't a needless remake. It's not like Roadhouse itself is that original of a premise. Like this could easily have been, you know, it being 35 years later. You can rework that plot, add in a few new details like they've done with the MMA angle, and then call it something else. I think that would have been way better, but oh well.
Yeah. Well, you'll be getting that movie on March 21st on Prime, guys, on theaters.
So I looked it up earlier, and I see March 8th as the answer that I got for the release. So where did you get March 21st from?
So the world premiere is scheduled for March 8th at South by Southwest. So that's where they're doing the world premiere.
I see.
And it will be released on Prime Video on March 21st.
Okay, nice. Well, that changes. Thanks. That's great. So yeah, again, a stacked March. Have that to look forward to, I guess, if that's the right wording. I honestly think that I'm less likely to see it now that it's going straight to Prime. I don't really watch a lot of Prime originals. I think I would have at least maybe if it was a slow month, might have gone to see it in theaters. But anyway, sort of in a different approach here, a comedy release that's also coming out in March. There was a trailer drop for a movie that I had heard nothing about until
and oddly enough on Prime Video too. It's another Amazon. Is it
another Prime?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Ricky Sinicky, again, a movie that I otherwise on paper doubt I ever would have really like given the time of day. I gotta say, this trailer kind of caught my interest. I like the premise of it. I haven't really seen or heard of any movie go for something like this before. And I like the talent involved. What did you think of the trailer?
I thought the trailer was funny. And this is Peter Hurley is directing this, who you know That's is right. known for back in the day, like doing like stuff like Dumb and Dumber and Shallow Hal, Me, Myself, and Irene. So like, there's something about Mary as well. So like, very big like comedic director who kind of pivoted a bit and did Green Book, and you know did like something more dramatic, and you know. But now he's back to kind of like a return to form, I guess, like doing a style of comedy that he was known for back in the day. Yeah. I like the talent involved seems fun too. We got Zac Efron, John Cena, Jermaine Fowler, Andrew Santino, Lex Scott, Davis, and William H. Macy. The plot is pretty interesting. So Ricky Sinicky is the name of an imaginary character invented by three long-term friends as someone to blame for their misbehavior over the past two decades. When their partners become suspicious and demand to meet Sinicky, they decide to hire a wash-up actor to bring the character to life. Yeah, I thought it looked funny. And I actually like Zac Efron in comedy too. I know he's funny. We were just talking about like him and Iron Claw. How good he is, how good that he showed that he's a great dramatic actor too. But I do remember when I saw Neighbors and I didn't know that he could be funny. And he's hilarious in that movie. Like, he has really good.
I just rewatched Neighbors actually not long ago, and he had me busting the gut at a few different points. I think he can really work both sides of the spectrum between comedy and drama. And I got to say, it's Dirty Grandpa being another great example of his comedic chops. I find him funny. He's got good comedic timing. I like John Cena in this role. He had a couple lines in the trailer that actually had me laughing, even though I just thought I would find this dumb. In the airport when he's like clearly urinated his pants and dude, he goes, "No, don't worry. It's not what it looks like. It's just piss." It's like that actually got a pretty good laugh out of me. So I guess I wouldn't have thought much about this movie on paper, but convincing trailer. I can't remember the name. There's an actor in this movie and I got to look him up. He's like one half of the Bad Friends podcast with Bobby Lee. And he was just in, he was in Beef, actually. He's got a small role in Beef, which I'm also currently watching. And I can't remember his name. He's like a redheaded actor. He's hilarious. Oh,
that's Andrew Santino. Yeah.
Is that his name? Okay, yeah. He's quite funny. And so I haven't seen him in the role this big.
He has some really funny stand-up stuff. He is actually really funny.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, he's really funny in that. I actually like some of his stand-up stuff. Yeah,
I haven't seen his stand-up, but I would.
This looks actually fun. I mean, again, I wonder if this would have worked in theaters instead of just going straight to Prime.
But
speaking of comedic chops, John Cena is also really funny. Like in general, I think he has really good comic timing too. And John Cena is one of those wrestlers turned actors that really leaned into what works for him. And he really is good at like just not taking himself too seriously and just kind of playing stuff for laughs more than being serious.
I'll give you that.
A light compliment? I'll give you that, I guess.
For sure. I couldn't picture him doing anything like too seriously dramatic, but I gotta give it to him. He sticks to what he's good at, and I can appreciate that. I know he had that like that action hero stint in like the 2000s and 2010s that I feel like he's mostly left behind, except for like I guess Peacemaker would be an example, but still more of a comedic action hero role. Right. And I think with a good direction, good writing, he has some good moments. He can be funny. So yeah, he looked great in that. I would be inclined to check this out if the circumstances are right. And that is releasing, it looks like, unless I'm wrong again. I think I have March 7th as a release.
You got it.
There we go.
You got it on Prime Video. So I'll check that one out when it comes out, guys. Mm-hmm. All right. So our next trailer, Sydney Sweeney having a moment. She's in a lot of stuff this year, I guess.
She's a busy gal right now.
Just recently, she's in a lot of stuff. We, of course, you know her from like Euphoria. She was on the first season of White Lotus. She's just in Anyone But You, which kind of proved that romantic comedies can make money. Still, did very well. And that's a movie that she's in. I mean, good for her. I hope it does well for her. And then she's also in this new horror movie called Immaculate, which dropped a trailer. The premise of it is a devoutly religious woman named Cecilia is offered a role at an illustrious convent in the Italian countryside. Her seemingly picture-perfect new home is soon revealed to hold horrifying secrets. This was encouraging them. I didn't like love the trailer, but it is a neon release, which kind of makes me like, oh, well, it could be good. It feels like almost every other horror movie that deals with this subject matter a bit. Like it looks like more of the same. So that was the vibe after I watched the trailer. I was like, oh, that could have been any other movie that looked like this with that very similar plot.
Agreed.
But again, she seems like she is doing well in the trailer. Like it looks like another good turn for her.
Here's the thing. I I actually, come to think of it, I haven't seen any like straight up Sydney Sweeney performances beyond some scenes from Euphoria that I actually think she does well in for the character that she's cast as. I'm a little bit on the other side of the fence here, where I was down for the trailer, derivative as it may be from several other horror movies. There's enough like disturbing imagery in here that I think it might be up my alley. Like you mentioned, it being a neon produced movie, they're usually a pretty hit studio, like A24. I consider them like partner studios. But I was, other than like too many revealing jump scares, I was more on board for the concept of the movie in the trailer versus Sydney Sweeney's performance in the trailer. That's not to say that I'm not like, I'll check her out and see and make an assessment after I see it. But like, she didn't really sell me. I wouldn't be watching this for her necessarily as I would be for like the premise of the movie, but I have heard mixed things, like a little bit of both of what we both had to say about her online. Once this trailer dropped, I was watching a couple like blind reactions, and some people were saying, I'm in this for Sydney Sweeney. I don't care much for the trailer, but they want to see her in a horror movie, which I can get behind. I'd like to see her in that, anything other than like a unintentionally scary performance like Madame Web. And then I've heard some people say like, I like the trailer, but I'm not necessarily seeing it for Sydney Sweeney. And that's kind of the camp I fall in, but I'd be interested to see how she does with this sort of material. I don't think that she's a bad actress by any means. Just, I got to see more of her work before I really have an opinion.
Yeah. She's not a bad actress. So I remember, because I've watched all of Euphoria, she's great. And like,
she looks great in that show.
And she's definitely, season two is like, her time to shine in that. She has a lot more to do, and her character goes through a lot of stuff. But I remember when, I think we talked about it when we both had watched the official trailer for Anyone But You. And I think we both kind of felt bad being like, all right, Glenn Powell seems really funny in this, but there's something not quite convincing about her. Like, I wasn't like getting the vibe that like, oh, she's going to be so funny in this. Like, I was like, I just didn't pick up on it. And like, and this is coming from me too. I've seen her in stuff that I enjoyed, and I think she's good. But I watched that trailer, and I was like, "Oh, maybe like comedy's not her thing." But you know what? People have seen that movie and they've enjoyed it. So I don't know really.
Well, she went as far as to actually be bitten by that spider in that movie.
Oh yeah,
So like, I gotta give props to her for going that far with that. I would never in a million years be in that situation. So I respect her to an extent, without a doubt.
I got a shout out my buddy David, who I went to middle school with. He was on our Halloween 4 episode briefly in the beginning. I love, like, he'll just randomly send me messages on Instagram, and sometimes it will be about her, and he's just like, I don't understand the hype. I don't get it. I get that she's hot, but that's like, he doesn't really quite see like why she is suddenly in everything. And she came out of nowhere, where it's like she went from like girl on Euphoria to like, every time I was like reading the trades, it was like, she's got cast in this and she's producing this. Like, she's not, and she's also producing too, on top of like picking up roles. And yeah, it's like they've suddenly have been throwing her in everything. I guess I kind of fall on that. I mean, because she is good on Euphoria, right? But I don't get where all of a sudden it's just like, wow, like she's a new It Girl.
I think she's the kind of like flavor of the month, or at least the quarter, in the sense that like Jenna Ortega was like last year. She's just having her moment where she and everything, and it'll probably slow down. Fun fact about her, she threw the opening pitch of a baseball game I was at a couple summers ago, which is pretty cool.
Oh, really?
Nice. Yeah, but like, you're like, even movies aside, she's been promoted by like, she was in a big series of Ford commercials that I kept seeing, to the point where I was kind of annoyed. And it's like,
she was in like a Rolling Stones music video recently too.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, like, that's right. Yeah, she was.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there is such thing as, I don't know if like too much of a good thing is the right
overexposure.
Exactly. And I feel like I'm getting that from her, where it's like, I am not judging her on her acting merits. More so, I am like seeing her and everything, I'm like, why? But
yeah, you know who went through this in a similar way, and she had to go away for a little bit so they can remember like why they liked her. Jennifer Lawrence is like this, and I kind of felt like she was at a point where like she was in everything. Now, Jennifer Lawrence is incredibly talented. I'm not saying that she's a bad actress by any means, but there was a period where she was just in everything, and she legit took a break for a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah, and then came back and did Causeway, and then she did No Hard Feelings, but she did take a break. And I, not saying that I hope that we, that people will feel like Sydney Sweeney is overexposed. It's just like, again, like I like there's a period I was like, I would just open the trays. I was like, oh, they cast her something else. Like, oh, okay, all right.
And everything these days, it seems.
And but, by the way, for all the people who are breaking out from Euphoria, like, you know, we got Zendaya, her, Jacob Elordi, they're still writing season three. And I know there's supposed to be a time jump. I'm just wondering if they have to make sure that these actors have the time to do it, because they are picking up projects left and right. So we'll see how that comes together, I guess. But yeah. And everything. I mean, I get it. She's a gorgeous girl, and I get it on some level. But it's
right.
Yeah. I was like, what did she do? Just be like, on everyone's radar now.
I don't know. She's got the it girl charm, I guess, but I'm interested in, I commend her for breaking out into like a different avenue, like going down the horror route. I think that's great. Yeah. So interested to see how she does in Immaculate, which looks like it comes out March 22nd. And
another March release. Theatrical.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice. Oh, this one is great.
Other ones we're talking about. Finally a theatrical release.
Yeah, geez. Which brings us to our last trailer reaction. I don't know what your thoughts are on this. I think we kind of fall. It seems like we both are in the same boat with this one. I don't know. We haven't really chatted this much before, I don't think. But Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, what do you think?
I spoke on this before we started recording. I like the original Ghostbusters. It's good. It's part of growing up. For a lot of us. That being said, I am not I don't worship at its altar like other people in my generation that think it's like the best thing since sliced bread. I don't know. Like, it's fine, it's entertaining. It's not like I don't like it, but it one from a lot of the movies that came out during that period, like 84, that you grew up with in the 80s and watching them in like into the 90s and stuff like that. I've watched it, but I've never was one to like give it repeat viewings, like, oh, I love it. It was like Back to the Future. If I had to name like an 80s movie, that movie's like that for me.
Okay.
But Ghostbusters never was. And so, and then Ghostbusters 2 is just like not nearly as good as the first one. It's just there. And they didn't even want to make Ghostbusters 2. Like, they, that was kind of like this one made money and they kind of forced them all to kind of do it. And, and then, of course, we got the female one, which is unfairly kind of raked through the coals though, because of having an all female cast. Like fans were hating on it before they even saw a single frame of the movie, so that part wasn't necessarily fair. But also wasn't great either, though. On top of that, and then I know they did the whole like nostalgia thing with Ghostbusters Afterlife, and I think it's cool that Ivan Reitman's son directed it, so that was cool that he had a familial connection to it. I saw it, again, entertaining, fine in the moment, but I wasn't riding that nostalgia wave like everyone else was.
Okay.
And so with this one, I feel the same way after I watched the trailer. I was like, I don't need more Ghostbusters. And
okay, interesting.
It looks like they're having fun. I mean, I like Paul Rudd, and I think it's cool that, I think the one thing that I do think that works in his favor, and like it works in Afterlife's favor, was a combination of the old and the new, but having like, you know, what the original cast and stuff from Ghostbusters, and bringing them in with like a younger generation and also newer actors too, that kind of have a blending of those two worlds. That's cool that they made it work. The IP has never been something And I feel bad because like a lot of people, if you sell someone that you think Ghostbusters is like just okay, they'll fight you, man.
I've never seen a single Ghostbusters property movie, never played a game. I've never interacted with Ghostbusters. It's never appealed to me. I mean, do I think it's probably a timeless 80s classic? I'm sure it has its merits, but like it's nothing about it has never really appealed to me to go back and see. I'm sure I will eventually see the first one. I don't have any interest in any of the subsequent movies, but to say I've seen the first one, I feel like I need to at some point. But even like watching this trailer for Frozen Empire, I wasn't really impressed with the earlier trailer that we got last year. Seeing like they're not even like they're bringing back like some of the famous like monsters / ghosts from the original one, with like that green slimy looking one, marshmallow Puff Man.
Yeah.
At what point, like, it just seems like such a shameless creatively bankrupt property here? Like, is this really necessary? Like, I think from the little I do know about Afterlife, it seems like it didn't borrow too much from like the first one, other than like, you know, the property itself. But
right,
it seems like it went in a more original direction than this one seems to be going. I could be wrong about that, but I don't know. Something about this new trailer, seeing it's definitely leaning heavy into the nostalgia and the familiarity from the original. And I, on a movie that I already don't care enough about it being made, and it being like a shameless reboot, requel sort of trend, I just think, yeah, I have no excitement for this movie. But then again, I'm not a Ghostbusters fan by any means, so this means nothing. If fans are happy about it, I'd be curious to see what they think about it, especially fans, diehards of the original 80s. And the second one came out in the 90s, or was it also later 80s?
The second one came out in 89, the same summer as Batman. And it got his ass kicked by Batman. That was one of the big box office stories from that summer. There was a lot that came out, and they admit that Ghostbusters 2 was more of like, hey, that first one made money. The studio really wanted them to make another one. And all the creators behind it, like Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, and all them, didn't really want to do it. It was like kind of like they begrudgingly came up with an idea for Ghostbusters 2. And when you're watching it, it's just like, it feels more like a rehash of the first one, but not as good. But like I said, there are people that worship at the altar of Ghostbusters and are like so excited to get another one. I just didn't feel anything when I watched the trailer. I mean, like I said, I do feel like I'm betraying my generation by not loving it. but it's just not for me.
You're not alone.
But if anyone's curious about what this is about, in Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, the Spengler family decide to leave Somerville, Oklahoma, and go back to where it all started, the iconic New York City firehouse, and help the original Ghostbusters, who develop a top-secret research lab to take busting ghosts to the next level. But when the discovery of an ancient artifact unleashes an evil force, Ghostbusters new and old must join forces to protect their home and save the world from a second ice age. That even sounds Jesus dumb. As I was reading it, I was like, oh, that's not fun at all.
Back where it all started. How many times have you seen that done in movies? Like, it just, oh my God, do anything else. Yeah. Anyway, I'm glad we both feel the same way about that.
Gil Keenan is actually directing this one. Jason Reitman is not directing it, but he did co-write it with Gil Keenan. I'm trying to see what else Gil Keaton has done. Oh, he did Monster House. Oh, wow. I actually like that movie. He did Monster House in 2006. And then he also did the Poltergeist remake in 2015. Bad. You got, you know, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, and Andy Potts are coming back from Ghostbusters. They were all in the original movie. And then you got more of the new cast, Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon, Finn Wolfhard, McKenna Grace, Celeste O'Connor, you know, and then they added Kumail Nanjiani into the project as well, and Patton Oswalt. I also find it hard to like not like anything. I mean, I can probably enjoy Paul Rudd on like in like mediocre stuff. So I'm like, he's cool. He's like a reliable presence and stuff like this. I just I don't even know if I would even like rush out to see it. I was like, if I heard great things about it, but I'd be hearing great things about it from people that love Ghostbusters.
Exactly. So I won't know how. I can't really take the praise with a grain of salt. I think it'll be, even then, I don't know if this even appeals to long time Ghostbusters fans. I don't really know. I don't really know or associate with any big Ghostbusters fan. No one really in my, but in the sense that like, I don't really know anybody that's singing Ghostbusters praises. I don't know anybody that like is talking about that movie, that it doesn't really resonate with my generation as much, I don't think. Like my friends that may have seen it have probably seen the original like once, but I don't know.
And the grand pantheon of 80s movies, I've never understood how it's so like highly regarded. I've never understood it, but I mean, like,
and you
would think, because I grew up, I mean, I would have been primed to have grown up with it and been like,
yeah, definitely,
I love that movie. You would think I probably like, after it was over, just replayed it again and watched it again, but no, I never have. And fine in the moment, just, you know, never stayed with me the way it has with every other person from my generation.
Interesting. Yeah, well, that summarizes our news. I guess the next thing we have to look forward to is our box office prediction for Matthew Vaughn's next movie, Argylle, which opens up, I think it's February 4th. That's this weekend, the Friday.
Yeah, the Friday, yeah.
Yeah.
And or second, our second. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, second, right. Yes,
second, yeah, 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 yeah.
So it's a little early. Is that a Thursday?
Is it?
Because tomorrow, as it was, what, the 29th today, 31st. Maybe this is earlier in the week than I thought.
I was like, how many days are in January?
31.
It's a Friday. February 2nd.
Oh, yeah. Okay. The 2nd. Okay. I thought the 4th was a Friday. So thank you for that. Yeah. I'm just looking at his filmography right here, and I've actually seen more of Matthew Vaughn's movies than I realized. I'm a big fan of his debut, Layer Cake from 2004. Have you seen that with Daniel Craig?
Yeah. It's actually really good.
Kick-Ass is the first movie I know him for from 2010. That movie's great too. And then I haven't seen X-Men First Class. I know he's really – I didn't realize it was the only one he did, though. I thought he would have done a couple.
They wanted him involved in Days of Future Past, but they felt more important to bring Bryan Singer
back. Was it Bryan Singer that did that? Okay.
Yeah.
And then his first two Kingsman movies I've seen, but not his most recent one.
He mostly has at least as entertainment value, more hits and misses. But what we learned before we started recording this episode, because I had no idea how much the movie cost to make, it's a $200 million movie. And I would have never guessed that from the trailers we've seen so far. And I think we actually were we talking on the show before where I don't know, maybe it wasn't us, but I can't remember because I've been on a couple other shows talking about this movie too. Nothing about this really grabs me trailer wise. I haven't been it's like maybe it'll be okay, but I. And the cast is great. I mean, it has a really good ensemble cast.
It really does.
Yeah. I mean, Henry Cavill, Bryce Dallas Howard, Sam Rockwell, Bryan Cranston, Catherine O'Hara, Dua Lipa. Ariana DeBose, John Cena, and Samuel L. Jackson. That is a great lineup. I don't know why I'm not stoked or excited to see it, but yeah.
Yeah, no, nothing about this trailer intrigued me. The cast ensemble, like sort of portrait that is like, I feel like on every single movie these days, I just don't really like. It didn't really grab me, like the sort of absurd humor that like his Kingsman movies really have that work in the context of those movies. I feel like this is just like a different shade of his Kingsman movie. And I don't really feel like it's something that like really I wanted to see from him. Cause I love his filmography for the most part, the ones I've seen. He has a lot of success under his belt, but like there's something about this movie that is feel like it's leaning into the silly absurdist side. And that's very much not me, not what appeals to me. And I think I'm sort of getting a lot of that from what I've seen, like even the whole like cat being involved in like a lot of these like silly sequences, I just find dumb. Yeah. It's actually his own cat too, which is kind of interesting. Like it's actually Matthew Vaughn's cat, which is neat, but yeah. I don't know. There's nothing really about this movie that really intrigues me. I don't know how this movie is $200 million other than that most of that must just go to the stunt and the cast, but geez. And yeah. 2 hours and 19 minutes too. That's a lengthy
one. Yeah, that was another thing I saw that I was like, man, that doesn't need to be that long. I guess the one thing that might bail them out is that it's being released by Universal Pictures. It's also an Apple original film, though, that will be on Apple TV Plus at an undetermined date. So I guess we're in a similar situation as Killers of the Flower Moon, which also had a huge budget and didn't really return that budget theatrically, but it might be worth it to Apple to invest in it. Same thing with Napoleon as well. But I don't know, $200 million, even if it is like going to eventually be thrown on Apple TV Plus. It just seems like a lot for this kind of movie.
It absolutely does.
Like on an unproven IP.
That's a great point.
All right. So the tracking on this one is at right now $23 million opening weekend. Which is not a great start. Not a great start.
So this is definitely losing money, even if it goes above tracking. I can't see this movie really doing very solidly in the box office. That's a shame, I suppose. But tracking at 23.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it really up against much this weekend? I think there wasn't really much release last week. Number one in the box office.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that after this because it was a very dismal box office weekend.
Yeah.
I don't think it is opening against anything, so there's that. And then we haven't had like a really – Yeah, we haven't had a new wide release in a couple weeks, so that that's working its benefit, I guess. I don't know. You want to go first? Or you want?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm gonna put it at like a nice 22. I guess it'll come in, which is technically below tracking, but I think it's gonna be more like on par. I think that's low, considering like the advantages it does have going into the weekend with not really much competing with it. It's got a great ensemble cast from a proven director who people love. I don't think the time of year is great for this movie. So that's kind of my justification, 22.
And I think something about it is like so niche and like kind of offbeat that I'm trying to figure out who it totally appeals to, even though it has like a great cast like that. Like it's like when people are watching that trailer, they're like, is this for me? I don't know. You know,
Henry Cavill's haircut in this movie is enough to really keep me away.
Yeah. Kill box office. I'm going to go with 20. I'm going to go below a little bit lower.
You know what else I find interesting is the tagline above Argyle on this poster is from the twisted mind of Matthew Vaughn. I don't feel like he's really earned that. I don't really know why that's the adjective they're using. I find that I remember actually that stood out to me the first time I saw the trailer in the theaters. It like opened with that, and I'm like, that is just not the word I would use to describe Matthew Vaughn. But okay,
yeah. There we go. All right, so we got 22 from you. 20 from me. Just because we didn't have a news show, we did the Oscar nominations. We didn't get to tell you about the second weekend of Mean Girls. The second weekend of Mean Girls made it was $11.7 million in the second weekend. It had like a 59% drop, so it was very front loaded. But I guess I predicted you said 16.
That's right, and I believe you said 18.
In week one. For our going up against each other tally, we called it a draw because it was I got the 3 day right, and then but you were closer to the 4 day, so we both took that one, but with this one I believe since I went lower right than you did, so
I think you said 18.
Oh, I 18. Okay, then you win.
It came in. Let me double check. I didn't write it down, but I think we were both so wrong.
So whoever's the closest.
Yeah, you would come in at 18 and I'd come in with 16, but 59% drop. Right. I don't think either of us were thinking it would be that low.
Yeah, but I guess you technically win that one because you were closer to the $11.7 million.
Closer. None of us are really close, but sure, I'll take it.
So we'll call you a win on that. So we'll be tallying on this throughout the year for the box office. So one was a tie. This one Jackson got, and then we'll see who's going to be the closest for Argyle. And then we'll also get your predictions from our socials for Argyle as well. And just quick box office news. Yes, Mean Girls is still the number one movie in America for the third week in a row. But this was a very low grossing box office weekend. It was number one, $6.9 million, 40% drop from last week. It barely came out ahead of The Beekeeper, which is $6.6 million, 22% drop. That movie for Jason Statham is getting a lot of good word of mouth and it's actually doing pretty well. I had no desire to see it, but I heard it's good from other people who have seen it.
David Ayer directing. I did not know that until I don't know, a week or two ago.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm happy for him because I know he's still that whole Suicide Squad thing is still like a tough topic for him. So good for him. Mean Girls is still successful in the end though. It's like a $36 million movie. It's made $83 million worldwide, $60 million so far domestically. The Beekeeper, $41.5 million here so far. I think believe it's a $45 million movie, but it's made $103.4 million worldwide. Nice. Wonka is still in the top five of the box office. It has made $194.9 million domestic and $552.2 million worldwide. It clearly was the biggest movie from the Christmas holiday corridor, and it's still in the top five. I think mostly because there's like a lack of content right now. To throw no more kudos to anyone but you, it's still getting good word of mouth. It has made $71 million domestically on a $25 million budget and $126.4 million worldwide. It is the highest grossing R-rated rom-com since Bridget Jones's Baby, I believe in 2016 or 2018. I'm trying to figure out where that came out, but that's how rough it's been for R-rated romantic comedies. But this one has legs. Like I remember when I called it wrong because they had a really low opening weekend that the weekend it came out in December, and I thought it was going to be a miss, but people found it eventually, and it's gotten good word of mouth. And that is the concept, and I guess just star power. I think that just proves that people like Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell together. So
I guess so.
Good for them. And I think that's kind of all little box office updates. You know what's funny is that Night Swim is already on.
The same month it came out in the theater.
Yeah. And I got sent a copy of it, and I was like, I want to watch it so I can like share and how violent it is with you.
Watch something else that you need from last year, please. Yeah. There's so many after going through our top 10 lists. Spend that hour and 45 minutes or whatever on anything else. But I get the feeling of wanting to watch something to shit on it, but God, you'll just regret it.
You're like, don't waste your time.
Don't waste your time. I'm telling you this as a friend. But
thank you.
You do end up doing it, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
All right. And I think that's everything.
That's everything. Yes, your turn to sign us off. And this has been 148.
Episode 148 of Back to the Blockbuster. Thank you guys for listening to a little quick rundown of the weekly news and box office. Like we said, we will be taking your box office predictions and throwing them up on our stories and then sharing your predictions on our next episode. As always, you can listen to us on anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Spotify. But we really would love for you to listen to us on the Playlist Studios app, because they are our podcast network and they are very good to us. And we want to shout them out as much as we can. As always, you can kind of keep up with this content as well across all of our socials at Back to the Blockbuster, whether it's X/Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, soon to be on YouTube as well. We are working that into the mix so you can see our beautiful, handsome faces every week as well, if you don't want to just listen to us. As always, thanks for listening. We have some great content coming at you in February as well. Anniversary episodes. It's going to be daunting. They're still starting off kind of like not too daunting yet. Mm. But man, once we get to March, it's getting busy. But we're really looking forward to doing those. And we have some fun guests coming on at least one of those anniversary episodes in February. And I do want to mention the Deep Dive spinoff too as well. I recorded a Suspiria episode with a fun podcast as well, and that'll be out very, very soon. Ty will be joining me on, this is going to be a first for the Deep Dive, but we are going to go over the Oceans trilogy, so Oceans 11, 12, and 13 for one of our Deep Dives too. And I also have Hot Fuzz coming up with another SeaWorld Order podcast that will be coming out soon as well. So that is still going strong, and like I said, if you guys want to join us on the Deep Dive, just keep sending messages and let us know what you want to deep dive, and we will love to have you on the show. Jackson will be on there eventually again. 100%. whenever he wants to deep dive something. We're looking forward to a lot of great stuff across this show and the main show, so we're very excited.
And that wraps up the month of January. We're 1 month down into 2024. It's been a ride. Thank you guys for tuning in each and every week to listen to us chat movies, and we'll be back at you next week. Until then, take care, guys.